Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about the Hanoi summit, more investigations into President Trump, problems for President Macron and Prime Ministers Trudeau and Netanyahu, elections in Algeria, and of course, Brexit. I hope you enjoy listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As we begin the program this evening, just to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate our guests' sleeping schedule. And, of course, it's going on towards midnight as this program is airing here on Viewpoints. And, of course, it's always a pleasure to have Tom Arms joining us. And, Tom, good evening to you. And let's start with the weather there in London and in the European region.
Oh, it's pretty dull and gray at the moment. Back to winter. We had a really nice spell a week or two ago, but it's been quite windy. We had something called Storm Freya, which brought in some rain, and now it's brought in a lot of gray clouds. Oh, you're depressing me talking about it.
Well, we've had a little bit of winter. As a matter of fact, it's worked out that here in the States, winter leaves like a lion, as we approach spring. It's, what's the old adage? In like a lion and out like a lamb. And spring has now gotten very cool. As a matter of fact, we're about to enjoy this weekend daylight savings time. And I'm wondering, do you all enjoy saving daylight there in the European community?
Yeah, but we don't change until the end of March.
Oh, so now you and I are going to have to reschedule our conversations.
Yeah, we never get it right, do
no,
we?
No. All right, so you do have daylight savings. Oh, here's a quick question. That's, of course, in the United Kingdom. How about in Europe? Does the rest of Europe also recognize daylight savings of some nature?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, they do.
That is interesting. And is it all on the end of March for everyone? Everybody?
Yes, I believe it is. I believe it is. It's all to please the farmers.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting. We have one state, or is it two states, Arizona and Hawaii, that do not celebrate daylight savings. So we have, I think, one county in the U.S. that doesn't also recognize daylight savings, something of that nature. It's one of those oddities.
That must be more confusing than helping.
I know it. It's just, it's one of those things. I don't know why we think we can. Well, we're, of course, thinking we can alter climate, so we can alter daylight as well. All right. As always, a pleasure to have Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us. And just to remind the audience, we're experiencing daylight savings starting this Sunday. And you said in the European community, it starts the end of March.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll remember to set our clocks back twice with you. All right, Tom, let's look into the events of the past week. I want to start off with some breaking news, relatively breaking news, over the past 2 days when it was noted that Michael Bloomberg, a noted billionaire, and Hillary Clinton, a noted multimillionaire, have both announced that they are not running for the presidency. They are not interested in seeking the presidential nomination from the Democrats this coming election. Was that somewhat of a surprise, or is that even
no.
news?
No, I think, you know, people here are really more interested in who is running rather than who is not running.
Okay.
Bloomberg may have gotten a paragraph's mention. That's about it. Hillary got a bit more, but more along the lines of two things. One, that she's already blazed the trail for any women who want to go for that glass ceiling. And so that was her contribution. And two, that two attempts are more than enough.
By the way, is that perceived as a losing track record? In other words, here in the States, losers are not well appreciated. And I'm wondering, is she perceived as a loser among the European community?
Not really. I mean, you know, okay. if you get to be Secretary of State and a senior senator from New York, you're a pretty important person. No, there's a lot of people. You know, she's effectively leader of the opposition. If she wanted to go for head of an international organization or something like that, I'm sure they'd snap her up. So I don't think it's seen as losing. She just didn't get the very, very, very top job.
Well, okay. I don't know that she would be accepted as a senior executive in major corporations, but okay. That's your thought. Here's a quick question for you, Tom. And of course, we've continued to see the announcement of a variety of new entrants into the Democrat campaign for the presidency. I'm curious. Bernie Sanders and, of course, Joe Biden has expressed a great deal of interest now. Those two candidates, are they perceived as being too old? What's the, you know, the sense there in the European community about the age of candidates this day and age?
Well, certainly, you know, Trump is no spring chicken himself.
Well, right.
So I don't think, you know, whoever runs against him, there is the age factor is being discussed, especially in regards to Biden more than in regards to Bernie Sanders for some reason. The general consensus here is that if Biden were to announce his candidacy, he would leapfrog in front of everyone else to start with.
Interesting.
Whether or not he would stay in front would depend on his campaigning skills.
Right, right. And the other aspect of this, and of course, we're seeing a lot of discussion right now on the issue of socialism, and we talked about this last week. Again, is that a topic that is continuing to, if you will, get coverage there in the European community, and that is the differential between a more capitalist organization and country versus a growing interest in socialism.
Most Europeans can't understand the American fear of socialism, because you equate socialism with Soviet Union or with Venezuela, and you don't equate socialism with countries such as Sweden, the Netherlands, Germany, democratic countries, and or Finland or Norway. Most of those countries have had or have socialist governments. But they're democratic socialists, while the ones in the Soviet Union and Venezuela were not democratic. And there's a very distinct difference.
Looking at other issues today as well, and I want to chat about the situation related to the investigations, the Mueller investigation. And, of course, there's a lot of discussion about that in relationship to the political scene here. My question to you is, how much coverage is that getting at this point?
Well, that is getting a lot of coverage. I mean, people are sort of sitting on the edge of his seat, you know, waiting for his report, which we're told is going to be coming almost any minute now. But then, of course, they're also looking at what's coming out of the House of Representatives. That could be even more interesting than what comes out of Mueller, because they are taking an extremely wide brief, a much wider brief than Mueller. And I think they've subpoenaed or are planning to subpoena or call 81 different people stroke entities, which is going to take an awful long time.
You know, this leads to the question, of course, of the Mueller investigation and the fact that we now have the House investigating the president. Is that not seen as a duplicative work, or as a matter of fact, is it not perceived as possibly designed to interrupt the president's abilities? I mean, I'm going to talk about this in relationship to the recent experience in Vietnam with President Kim Jong-un. But my question...
Well, I don't think people see the connection between the Hanoi summit and the Cohen report to the Judiciary Committee. They don't see that link. But I think they definitely see a link between trying to hobble the Trump administration and the general investigation. I don't think people over here, from what I've read and spoken to people, they don't think there's a chance of Trump being impeached or at least being thrown out of office. He could be impeached, but not thrown out of office, because he's got a majority in the Senate. But what the Democrats, they think, are aiming for is to try and make certain that he's not reelected in 2020 and that they get a Senate majority and a a Senate majority in 2020 and they win the presidential elections in 2020. And that they're using the attack on Trump to achieve that.
This is the assumption. This is what you understand is the perception of the community there in the London community, the UK and European community. So they're seeing it's a tit for tat situation between Obama and Trump as far as the efforts to unseat then President Obama. I'm curious, the overall opinion of President Trump in light of the populist movement there in the United Kingdom and in Europe, what is the perception of President Trump among the average voter, Tom, not by you, but I mean the average voter?
Well, I can just tell you that they do polls and they say that 85% disapprove of him.
Okay, I'd be interested in that observation. All right, we're going to take a quick break on that. We have joining us this afternoon Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with viewpoints around the world. And I think that's important. What we're talking to Tom about is how the rest of the world is perceiving what's going on here in the States and of other issues as well. So stay with us here on Viewpoints here on the Talk Station FM 107 AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And again, Tom is joining us from London, England. So it's some 5 hours ahead of us in time frame. So we are pre-recorded this portion of the program. Tom, continuing our conversations about, for example, the issues of the president and his administration. And I brought up the topic of Vietnam, the summit in Vietnam, where Kim Jong-un and the president parted ways pretty quickly. Now, of course, we're seeing stories about the fact that the North Koreans have continued to construction on missile launch sites. But back to something you said earlier, that there's a feeling there in the European community that the investigations and the Cohen remarks, Michael Cohen's remarks to the House, had little to do with the efforts on the part of the president to negotiate with Kim Jong-un. The president, on the other hand, has said no, that it did have a detrimental impact because it reduced his influence, if you will, in that summit. First question, is that the assumption or understanding of the European community? Or you said a few moments ago that it is not. Am I correct on that?
The feeling here is that it did not really have that much of an impact. That really, the summit was pretty much mishandled right from the start. That the idea that you should attack these problems from top down is never thought in Europe as being a good idea. That you should have months and months of negotiations at official level before you go in with the top people, the presidents and prime ministers, who already go into a summit where everything has already been agreed. They shake hands, they smile for the cameras, and they sign the various documents. That is not the way President Trump likes to do things, and it is frowned upon here in Europe.
Okay, you know, the other aspect of this, and I've just got to remind folks, we've gone for some 40 years without successful negotiations with North Korea. Trying something unique is perceived here as just not acceptable, then I gather, from the perspective of the European community.
No, I think you're putting the wrong spin on it. Mm. What I'm saying is that basically that you have to start from the bottom and work your way up.
You have to build with
small things such as opening a liaison office, such as actually speaking and trying to look for ways, areas in which you can agree. And actually talk to each other before you come to the big things.
Well, the question,
an established way. Yes, it is established, but, and it has worked in other parts of the world.
But it hasn't worked for 40 years with North Korea,
which, by the way, you haven't spoken to North Korea for 40 years. There's been no diplomatic connection between the two countries.
Which, by the way, was precipitated, I might add, by missiles being fired over Japan. You know, this is one of
it goes back a lot further than that.
Well, it does,
all the way back to the end of the Korean War.
But it does. But the problem is, we're just arguing over over a minor detail here. We've got other things to talk about, Tom, but it's just, I just find it fascinating that here we have someone who attempts to do something differently and, well, okay, it's frowned upon.
Well, it didn't work.
Well, you know what? It hasn't worked for 40 years. Let's move on to another issue, and that, of course, is the missile launch sites as well. And I'm wondering, what's the opinion there in the European community about that disclosure?
Too early to say. You know, it's only just been reported here in the last few hours.
Right. And frankly, it is relatively new here in the States as well. Let's move on to other events here. I want to talk about the experience just north of us in Canada. The Canadian leader, Mr. Trudeau, is having some significant problems with his cabinet and apparently is actually fighting for his political life. I've seen stories about this as well. What's happening in Canada?
Yeah, very interesting, isn't it? You know, he got put up on a pedestal and he's being knocked down because, you know, he probably put up a bit too high. He ran his campaign on transparency, gender equality, and reconciliation with Indigenous people. And, of course, three of his planks now have been pulled right out from underneath him because the transparency relates to the possible cover-up on corruption. Gender equality, the two ministers who've resigned from his cabinet are both women. Indigenous people, one of them is a Native American. So, you know, it doesn't look as if he's doing very well. He's got elections coming up in October. His popularity ratings are down from 63% at their peak to 35% in December, and they're probably lower now. They're probably more around the 30 mark. He basically was seen as a white knight, and it's, you know, when a white knight is seen to have even the slightest bit of tarnish on him, it looks really bad.
This goes back to the youth that was entering into the political scene. And, of course, Justin Trudeau is very young, and he had conflicts with President Trump and an on-again, off-again friendship, it seemed, at times. And I want to get into this in relationship to...
I don't think he was ever on.
Well, probably not, although he did attempt to, there were opportunities there between the two that they did try some sort of entente. But the other question, of course, has to do with the impact this has on the introduction of young leaders. And we do have to bring up President Macron of France as well in this conversation. The two have been perceived as young leaders and a new breath for a political leadership in the world. What's happening there? Is this just a matter of a situation of fits and starts, for example?
I don't think you can generalize too much. I think it depends on the individual. If we look at Macron, his popularity ratings are actually starting to rise. They've gone up 5 points in the last couple months. One of the differences between Macron and Trudeau is that Macron doesn't face re-election until 2022. That's right. Another 3 years away. It's over 3 years. Because his election is in May, whereas as Trudeau is in big excrement because his election's in October and he doesn't have much time to recover from his current problems.
Now, you know, one of the issues that Canada has suffered as well is a difficulty between the French and the British contingent within the Canadian government.
Yeah, and this is a key part of Trudeau's problems. Because the engineering firm which he's trying to help out, SNC-Lavalin, is based in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And Quebec is a swing province. I was going to say state, but it's mm-hmm. a province. And whichever way Quebec goes, generally that's the way the federal election result goes. So the reason Trudeau, not only because he comes from Quebec, but also one of the reasons he probably helped SNC-Lavalin was because it was going to save something like 45,000 jobs
right.
in Quebec.
Right. Well,
and that would have been had a big impact on the elections.
Well, this, of course, is one of those issues that we kind of watch with interest here in the States. I'm curious, before I move on to France here, is that something of grave concern for the European community and particularly the United Kingdom?
I think people have been looking to Justin Trudeau to set an example as a liberal, forward-thinking, young, dynamic prime minister. At one point, The Economist did a lead article in which it extolled Canada and Trudeau as being the leading liberal country in the world, and possibly the greatest place to live. So, yes, they watch with great interest. They don't want Trudeau to fail.
All right. We're going to get into the topic of young leaders here in a few moments and then get to the issue that I'm looking to talk about as well, Brexit, which doesn't seem to go away, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here joining us this evening on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. The Heartland Theory and its corollary discipline of geopolitics was all the rage in the 20th century. It emerged from the morass of nationalism to dominate diplomatic thinking right through the Cold War. Following the collapse of the Soviet Union, it sunk slowly over the diplomatic horizon as nationalism was gradually replaced by globalism, governed by an internationally agreed set of laws enforced by a largely, but not completely, altruistic United States. A Victorian geographer called Holford Mackinder was responsible for the Heartland Theory. He unveiled it in 1904 at a packed meeting of the World Geographical Society. He argued that advances in railways and other land transport meant that British-dominated sea power would be replaced by land power, and that whomever controlled the territory from Eastern Europe to China would control the heartland of Eurasia. Furthermore, that whomever controlled the heartland controlled what Mackinder called the World Island, which encompassed all of Europe, Asia, and Africa. And whomever controlled the World Island controlled the world. In the 1920s, Mackinder's ideas were picked up by the German geopolitical academic Karl Haushofer, who became an advisor to Adolf Hitler. The two men fell out over Hitler's racial policies, but the Heartland Theory became the blueprint for German expansion. During the Cold War, the Americans adopted it to justify the policy of containing the Soviet Union, which it thought was pursuing the heartland dream in Eastern Europe, Central Asia, and China. The collapse of the Soviet Union rendered the heartland theory redundant, for a time. It has been revived again by developments in the two Eurasian giants, China and Russia. China's Belt Road Initiative could have been taken straight out of Mackinder's book. Its railway links from Shanghai to London and its heavy investment in Africa can easily be viewed as a preemptive bid to gain control of the world island of Europe, Asia, and Africa. In this context, the current warm relations between Beijing and Moscow are worrying. Also worrying is a tightening embrace of the Heartland Theory by Russian strategic thinkers. Chief among them is self-proclaimed ultra-nationalist fascist Alexander Dugin, who is known to be a close advisor to President Putin, as well as his chief cheerleader. In 2014, he told Der Spiegel that any Russian who opposes Putin is mentally ill. Dugin is also a regular visitor to China, Mongolia, and the former Soviet satellites in Central Asia, urging political, economic, and military cooperation with Russia in such a way that they control Mackinder's heartland. In his view, the decade and a half between the end of the Cold War and the rise of Putin was merely a pause in the eternal struggle between an authoritarian Russia and an American-led liberal West. Dugin is also strongly opposed to globalization and the expansion of the EU and NATO into the former Soviet satellites in Eastern Europe. According to his book Basics of Geopolitics, the Russian geostrategist sees his united Eurasia as the staging area of a new anti-bourgeois, anti-American revolution. The new Eurasian empire will be constructed on the fundamental principles of the common enemy, the rejection of Atlanticism, strategic control of the USA, and refusal to allow liberal values to dominate us. Not surprisingly, Alexander Dugin's name was near the top of the American list of sanctioned individuals following Russia's Ukrainian adventure. With his long hair and unkempt beard, he has been compared to the mad monk Rasputin of Tsarist Russia. So, what is the West doing in response to the revival of the Heartland Theory? Nothing at best. Britain is self-obsessed with Brexit. France and Germany are struggling to hold the EU together. NATO and Atlanticism is suffering from Trump-inspired divisions. And as for the globalism underwritten by an agreed set of international rules, the obvious antidote to any world domination theory, well, that has been thrown out the window by Donald Trump in favor of a law of the jungle, America First policy.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, England, and of course some 5 hours ahead of us, so this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, we were just talking a few moments ago about Justin Trudeau and the challenges he's facing in Canada. I want to touch on the topic of President Macron of France, and the challenges he's facing with the yellow vests, but also, and I see a note here from you, the Campaign for Europe. What exactly is Mr. Macron's current political future there in France?
Well, as I said earlier, he's starting to climb again in the opinion polls. I mean, he was down to 23%. He's now up to about 30% in the opinion polls. He's going up, and he does have until 2022 to recover. He has recently, just this week, had published in all 28 EU member countries an opinion piece on the editorial pages, calling for a European renaissance. And he's basically opening or trying to lead a campaign, a European-wide campaign, to elect more pro-EU members of parliament, members of the European Parliament. And those elections will be held in May. And he sees this campaign as very important to the future development of Europe. And he sees, I think, his domestic position as being heavily tied to his success as a European leader.
And what is his domestic position right now in light of the revolution established by the yellow vest? I'll use that word.
Rebellion. The yellow vests are still there, but they're not. You know, they're not that well organized.
Okay.
You know, they're not a political party or anything like that. I'm not saying they're going to go away. I'm not saying they might not crop up again if there's another crisis such as there was over fuel prices. But you're not having as many demonstrations as there were. They have spread to other countries, but they tend to be either on the very far left in other countries or on the very far right.
The extremes. Okay.
They tend to be taking extreme positions.
All right. Tom, I want to move, since we talked about this in the European community and strengthening the European Union, let's talk about that in relation to Brexit.
Next week, we've got another big vote. Mrs. May's proposals are coming up. You get contradictory comments coming out all the time. The Attorney General is in Brussels. The British Attorney General is in Brussels as we speak. Trying to renegotiate the terms so that it's more palatable to various members of parliament. Theresa May says, oh, we're making progress. The EU negotiators say, we're making no progress at all.
So all right. So in essence,
you take your money, you take your choice.
Okay. Nothing's new.
It's beginning to look very much as if she has to make up 230 votes in Parliament. I don't think she can do it. I think it's impossible to ask. I don't think anyone else thinks she can do it. It's beginning to look as if they're going to have to go for a delay.
All right. And will that require, and will that result in another referendum?
We don't know.
Okay.
I think what will happen is, And my guess is as good as any. There are as many guesses as there are pundits these days. So this pundit says that it's likely to be delayed until June, during which time Theresa May's government will continue to try and renegotiate the deal.
Okay.
Again and again and
right.
again and
okay.
again.
All right. Well, then basically.
And there will be repeated votes.
All right.
And then at some point, if that deal does not get through, they will have to have a second referendum.
All right. I want to move on to other items associated with the European Union. And you've got a note here about the ending of a U.S.-EU diplomatic tiff. What are we talking about there?
Well, it's diplomatic protocol.
Okay.
Which is more important than people realize. A few months ago, the State Department or Trump administration downgraded the European Union's, or European Commission, I should say, status from would-be country to international organization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you think, well, so what?
Right.
Well, that's very important because the head of a country, would-be country, gets to meet with the president twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
The head of an international organization does not. They get to sit at certain places on the table. They're invited to certain functions.
So what is the conclusion on this one? I understand
well,
the difference.
The conclusion is that after various complaints from the EU, they have upgraded the EU back to would-be country.
Yet it's made up of multiple countries. I'm sympathetic.
It is made up of multiple countries.
But
it's always been the position of the United States ever since the creation of the EU to encourage moves towards greater political integration. So that is why they, many years ago, upgraded it to would-be country.
All right. So I think you've explained that. Okay, let's move on. I'm just very interested in that dispute.
The Trump administration does not want greater political integration.
I would have to disagree with you. I can appreciate the confusion in light of the fact we have multiple countries within the European Union. But let's not debate that. Let's move on to the topic of Venezuela. And what is Europe doing about the Venezuelans? We watch the continuing, confusion there, and I would say dissemblage of a country. What's the European community doing?
Well, you asked me last week whether or not Europe would support military intervention mm-hmm. in Venezuela.
Right.
And since then, their foreign affairs spokesman, Federico Mogherini, has come out and said, no, they would not support military intervention in Venezuela. They want to see a diplomatic solution. Having said that, it was a team of European diplomats and cars which escorted Guaido away from the airport, and the reason they did was because that way Guaido was given diplomatic immunity because he was traveling with diplomats who had immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So they're involved, they support, but they would not support military intervention.
Well, it's unfortunately a situation that is just continuing to unravel. And, of course, it's having a significant impact on all of South America as well. All right, moving on to other areas of the world, I want to talk briefly about the Algerian elections.
Yeah. Wow, that is strange. The president, Bouteflika, is 82 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been seen in public since 2014.
Right.
He's had at least one stroke and is known to be confined to a wheelchair. And he's running for a fifth term as president.
And
elections are to be held in April. Well, people are going a bit nuts. They're saying, we don't want an invalid as our president.
Oh, now, wait a second. The American Disability Act would be definitely opposed to your thinking there. There's nothing wrong. All right. The situation in Algeria, which has always been somewhat confusing. What's the condition of that country at this point?
Well, the condition is, you know, they're not certain who's ruling the country, whether
right.
it's Bouteflika's brother Saeed or General Ahmed Gayed Salah, for a start. Economically, it's in a mess, but not as much of a mess as other Arab countries because it has a lot of oil. There is no real opposition because the FLN party is the only solid party, mm-hmm. and the opposition is split between a number of different parties.
Okay, it sounds like to me it's a real mystery. We're going to take a quick break on that observation here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. I want to move to Israel and some events there, and then I'm looking forward to the upcoming topic, a fake Kim, and I'm assuming that's Kim Jong-un. Recently he was in Vietnam, and we're going to find out about a fake Kim being ejected. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, England. We're some 5 hours ahead of us, so this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, I want to get to the issue of fake Kim in just a moment, but two other items I want to put together here. We have an Israeli election coming up, and the president, not Netanyahu, is being challenged with a variety of charges of corruption. What is the future of that election at this point?
Well, at the moment, it looks as if it's going to be a very close-run thing. Certainly, Netanyahu is losing votes to the centrist parties and the center-left parties.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not he'll be able to form a coalition is uncertain. Now, the big danger is that he may be able to form a coalition, but in order to do so, would have to have in his government the very far right party.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this far right party, Yisrael Betanakyu, is led by a man called Avigdor Lieberman. And to give you an idea of just what their views are, they want to throw out all the Arabs in Israel.
Mm.
And that's 25% of the population.
And that would be, well, it'd be a big impact to its economic strength, and also would not be well received by the world.
By anyone.
Yeah, by the world. No.
They want to have an ethnically pure Israel.
Right.
Nothing but Jews allowed
yes.
in Israel.
All right. And my question.
And they would throw the Arabs out into Gaza and the West Bank.
What is the role of the European community in this? Are they paying close attention? Are they playing any role in helping?
Well, they're obviously paying very close attention. They would be very much opposed to this. I mean, you know, this smacks of apartheid.
What is the possibility of Mr. Netanyahu's opponent winning?
I'm sorry?
What is the potential of his opponent winning?
It's a toss-up.
Okay,
it's very close. It's a toss-up at the moment.
Okay, one other quick question before we get to the fake Kim. You make note of here, the U.S. closes its East Jerusalem consulate.
Yeah, this made headlines here. I don't know if it was noted much in the American press, but the East Jerusalem consulate was the diplomatic channel for Palestinians. That is a diplomatic channel to the U.S.
Uh-huh.
That's what it was used for. And so what the U.S. has said, what State Department has said, is we don't need that consulate in Jerusalem anymore because we have an embassy in Jerusalem.
Right.
So we're going to close it. And the Palestinians say, well, who are we going to talk to? Yeah, I mean, you've just closed another door in our face.
So they would not use the embassy?
No, because they do not recognize Jerusalem as the capital.
Oh, okay. And, of course, Jerusalem is where the new embassy is being opened, moving from Tel Aviv.
Yes.
By the way, what's the status of the building construction of the new embassy in Jerusalem?
I think they've already moved in.
Oh, that shows you I have been paying very little display or conversation about that here in the States. I know that there was talk of the move, but we've not seen a great deal of publicity on that. Have you seen it there in the European community?
No. I understood they moved in. I'll let you know next week. I'll check on it.
Let's talk now about the fake Kim. Kim Jong-un, I guess?
Yes. An Australian impersonator called Howard X. And he has a colleague called Russell White. Howard imitates Kim Jong-un, and Russell imitates or impersonates Donald Trump. And they decided that they would travel off to Vietnam, to Hanoi, and do a double act while the real Kim and Trump were in town. This did not go over very well with Kim or with the Vietnamese, who demanded that Howard X be thrown out of the country. And he was. He was ejected 24 hours before Kim stepped off his special train. The Trump impersonator was allowed to stay.
Oh, well.
So free speech in America, no free speech in North Korea.
Surprise, surprise. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Tom, very best to you. Thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.